Last month or so, I went on a bit of a Frank Lloyd Wright binge and went through a lot of his mainly early works to try and see if there was much to get out of it. And in the process, I came across some texts that he had published in the Architecture Record. And so this is a reading from one of those texts. It's from 1928. It's called In the Cause of Architecture, The Logic of the Plan. Plan. There is something elemental in the world itself. A pregnant plan has logic. Is the logic of the building squarely stated, unless it is the plan for a foolish fair? A good plan is the beginning and the end because every good plan is organic. That means that its development in all directions is inherent, inevitable. Scientifically, artistically, to foresee all is to plan. There is more beauty in a fine ground plan than in almost any of its ultimate consequences. In itself, it will have the rhythms, masses, and proportions of a good decoration if it is the organic plan for an organic building with individual style, consistent with materials. All is there seen: purpose, materials, method, character, style, the plan, the prophetic soul of the building. A building can only live, can live only because of the prophecy that is the plan. But it is a map, a chart, a mere diagram, a mathematical projection before the fact, and as we all have the occasion to know, accessory to infinite crimes. To judge the architect, one need only to look at his ground plan. He is master then and there, or never. Were all elevations of the genuine buildings of the world lost, and the ground plan saved, each building would construct itself again, because before the plan is a plan, it is a concept in some creative mind. And it is, after all, only a purposeful record of that dream which saw the destined building living in its appointed place. A dream, but precise and practical, the record to be read by the like-minded. The original plan may be thrown away as the work proceeds. Probably most of those for the most wonderful buildings in the world were, because the concept grows and matures during realization, if the mastermind is continually with the work. But the plan had first to be made. Ultimately, it should be corrected and recorded. But to throw the plans away is a luxury ill afforded by the organizations of our modern method. It has ruined owners and architects and enriched numberless contractors. Therefore, conceive the building in the imagination, not on paper, but in the mind, thoroughly before touching paper. Let it live there, gradually taking more definitive form before committing it to the drafting board. When the thing lives for you, start to plan it with tools, not before. To draw during conception or sketch, as we say, experimenting with practical adjustments to scale, is well enough if the concept is clear enough to be firmly held. It is best to cultivate the imagination to construct and complete the building before working upon it with T-square and triangle. Working on it with triangle and T-square should modify or extend or intensify or test the conception, complete the harmonious adjustment of its parts. But if the original concept is lost as the drawing proceeds, throw all away and begin afresh. To throw away a concept entirely to make way for a fresh one, that is a faculty of the mind not easily cultivated. Few have the capacity or have that capacity. It is perhaps a gift, but many but may be attained by practice. What I am trying to express is that the plan must start as a truly creative matter and mature as such. All is won or lost before anything more tangible begins. The several factors most important in making the plans after the general purpose scheme or projects are: second, materials; third, building methods; fourth, scale; fifth, articulation; sixth, expression or style. In the matter of scale, the human being is the logical norm because buildings are to be humanly inhabited and should be related to human proportions, not only comfortably but agreeably. Human beings should look as well in the building or of it as flowers do. Human beings should look as well in the building or of it as flowers do. People should belong to the building just as it should belong to them. This scale or unit of size of the various parts varies with the specific purpose of the building and the materials used to build it. The only sure way to hold all to scale is to adopt a unit system, unit lines crossing the paper both ways, spaced as predetermined, say 4 foot on centers or 2 1/8, or whatever seems to yield the proper scale for the proposed purpose. Divisions in space are thus brought into a certain texture in the result. Ordered scale in detail is sure to follow. A certain standardization is established here at the beginning, like the wrap in the Oriental rug. It has other and economic values in construction. I have found this valuable in practice, even in small houses. Experience is needed to fix upon the proper size of the unit for any particular building. Trained imagination is necessary to differentiate or syncopate or emphasize, to weave or play upon it consistently. Scale is really proportion. Who can teach proportion? Without a sense of proportion, no one should attempt to build. This gift of sense must be the diploma nature gave to the architect. Let the architect cling always to the normal human figure for his scale, and he cannot go so far wrong as Michelangelo did in St. Peter's in Rome. St. Peter's is invariably disappointing as a great building, for not until the eye deliberately catches a human figure for purpose or comparison does one realize that the building is vast. All the details are likewise huge, and the sense of grandeur it might have had if the great masses were qualified by details kept to human scale. This effect of grandeur is lost in the degradation of the human figure, a strange error for a sculptor to make. The safest practice in proportion is not to attempt to allow for perspective, stilting domes as he did, changing pitches of roofs as many do, and modifying the natural lines and masses to meet certain views from certain vantage points, as the Greeks are said to have done, but to make the constitution of the thing right in itself. Let the incidental perspectives fall where, when, and how they will. Trust nature to give proper values to a proper whole. The modifications she may make are better than any other. There is something radically wrong with a scheme that requires distortion to appear correct. In the matter of materials, these also affect scale. The logical material under the circumstances is the most natural material for the purpose. It is usually the most beautiful, and it is obvious that sticks will not space the same as stones, nor allow the same proportions as steel, nor will the spacing adjustable to these be natural to made blocks or to slabs or to plastic modeling of form. Sticks of wood will have their own natural volume and spacing determined by standards of use and manufacture and the nature of both. A wood plan is slender, light in texture, narrow spacing. A stone or brick plan is heavy, black in mass, wider in spacing. Combination of materials, lightness combined with massiveness, a cast block building, such massing as is felt to be adequate to the sense of block and box and slab, more freedom in spacing. The purely or physically plastic structure, center line of thin webbing with a flesh covering on either side unit system may be abandoned. Then there are the double wall constructions requiring great skill in spacing so that the interior shell will work simply with the outer shell, and there are as many others as there are combinations of these. But the most simple of materials used, the more the building tends toward a monomaterial building, the more nearly will perfect style reward an organic plan and ease of execution economize results, the more logical will the whole become. A wood plan is seen in the plan for the Coonley House at Riverside and in the plan for D101 House, a cast block and slab building, the plan for Unity Temple at Oak Park. Brick plans, the plan for the D.D. Martin residence in Buffalo and the Ullman House in Oak Park, Illinois. A steel and glass plan for a skyscraper, concrete supports and floor slabs. This plan will be used later in this series to illustrate another article. The purely plastic structure may be seen in the Einstein Tower by Mendelssohn and buildings by European modernists. A double wall construction in this case of precast blocks is seen in the Ennis House in Hollywood, a thin concrete slab structure, the merchandise buildings in Los Angeles. In the matter of building methods, these methods too are meantime shaping the plan. In the Coonley House, the 4-foot unit works with 16-inch centers as established in carpenter practice for the length of lathes and the economical spacing of studs and nailing bearings, standard lumber lengths. The Unity Temple, the only limit was the mass of concrete that could withstand the violent changes of climate and remain related to human scale and easy construction. The box and blocks, however, determine the shape of every feature and every detail of the features as it was all cast in boxes. So a unit suitable for timber construction was adopted as the false work for which the cast was made of lumber, multiples of 16 inches syncopated was the scale adopted. In the Martin House, brick was used. Brick lends itself to articulation in plan and is an easy material to use architecturally. Bricks naturally made that make corners, and the corners are easily used for play of light and shade. The Martin House was an organized brick pier building. It is when assembling groups of piers in rhythmical relation to the whole that brick comes out best according to its nature. A 7-foot 9-inch unit reduced by minor mullions of 3-foot 9 inches was used in the horizontal only. There are only views of brick as legitimate. There are other views of brick as legitimate as this one, to be used according to the individual taste of the designer, the broken masses of textured walls, for instance. In the steel and glass building, there are no walls. This method yields best to suspended screens, shop fabricated, and mechanized fabric enters here to give the form and style of that is architecture. The structure supports and floor slabs in this case happen to be concrete. They could be protected steel as well, planned on a 4-foot unit, emphasis on alternative verticals, no emphasis on horizontals. In the precast block building, the method of building wholly determines the form and style. This is a monomaterial structure planned on multiples of 16 inches square, both horizontal and vertical. No emphasis. The slab building is an expression of another method, cast slabs set sideways and lengthwise and flatwise, making everything as may be seen in the result planned on multiples of 7 feet. Concerning articulation, the Ennis House will serve to illustrate the principle, which, once grasped, is simple. In the building, each separate portion of the building devoted to a special purpose asserts itself as an individual factor in the whole. The dining room associated with terraces is one mass, the living room with bedroom attached another mass, standing at the center of a terrace of its own, the dominating feature of the group. Mr. Ennis's bedroom, semi-detached and used as a study or office, is another and terminal mass. At the rear is the kitchen, a subordinate mass. All are connected by a gallery passing along the group at the rear. Finally, the terrace wall ends in a detached mass to the rear of the lot, the garage and chauffeur's quarters. A little study will show how each separate room makes its own characteristic contribution to the whole mass. The complete whole crowns the end of a high ridge in Hollywood and is a precast slab block building woven together with steel. These articulations are so obvious in the plan as in the perspective. The Coonley House is similarly articulated. Articulate buildings of this type have their parallel in the music of Bach, particularly, but in any of the true form masters in music. It may be readily seen that in this particular direction lies infinite variety in expression. The sense of it is fundamental in any architectural release. In the matter of expression and style, as a matter of logic in the plan, it is easy to see there can be none except as the result of scale, materials, and building method. But with all that properly set, there is the important human equation at work in every move that is made. The architect weaves into all his sense of the whole. He articulates, emphasizes what he loves. No matter how technically faithful his logic may have been to his scale and materials and method, over and above all, living in the atmosphere created by the orchestration of those matters, hovers an indefinable quality of style. Style emanating from the form as seen by the man himself. And while it speaks to you of all those important matters, it leaves you imbued by dignity, grace, repose, gaiety, strength, severity, delicacy, and of rhythmical order, in a musical sense, as the master wills, just as music does. Usually you hear music as you work, but not necessarily. So every true building is of the quality of some man's soul, his sense of harmony and fitness, which is another kind of harmony, more or less manifest in the fallible human process. And his building will nobly stand, belonging to its site, breathing this message to the spirit quite naturally, so long as his work was well done, or the course of human events does not inundate or human ignorance willfully destroy his building.